Being trained in an effective crisis management system is imperative for minimizing behavioral issues and the need for restraint in schools and treatment facilities. But not all crisis management systems were created equal. If we are going to meet the growing intense behavioral needs of individuals while simultaneously reducing the need for restraints, every leader and policymaker who is involved in areas related to behavioral challenges should understand what a complete crisis management system is comprised of and how to embed one into any setting. For more information, check out crisisintervention.com. Okay, welcome back to the Crisis in Education podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Pauly, and I'm here with what I'm just going to go ahead and call it a unicorn man, Dr. Clarence Cooper, who is a board-certified behavior analyst doctorate level. And it's just so rare, unfortunately, I hate to say that, in our field, but you're like a unicorn. And what is very odd to me, and which is very cool to me as well, that we live right next to each other. I had no idea you even existed, man, which is exciting to me because maybe we can do some work together. I don't know. We also worked in the same county at the same time. Clarence, I wasn't aware of you, you know, I mean, because I was doing district stuff and I know that you were on the front line, man. You were in these classrooms, you were teaching, you're an ESE teacher. I know eventually you did some other things. You became a behavior analyst in the district. So I'm excited to hear about this stuff. And Clarence and I are going to start talking about some classroom management, some things that are, you know, people are struggling, kids are struggling, and what we should be doing instead. But Clarence, welcome to the podcast, man. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And you're too kind. You talking about me being a unicorn. I mean, you, all the things that you have accomplished, and, you know, you're right here. Like you said, we live in the same county, same city, and you're just doing beautiful things. And I've always kind of heard your name, but never had the opportunity to meet you. So again, thank you for allowing me to come on your platform and let others know who I am. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think you mentioned working in a school. That was one of the schools that I talk about. It's a school that myself and a good friend of mine, Dr. Scott Neal, ended up going in to turn around. My colleague and I, Anika Costa, we tell like real stories. Like when we're going out there, we work at different levels, district, school district, and even state levels, which has been pretty cool, man, to disseminate the science there. But, you always have some key stories. And I helped Scott turn around one of his schools, and then they asked him to go in and turn around another school. And he said, hey, can you come help me with the behavior issues? And that year, the school went from a C to an A, massive drops in suspensions, massive drops in discipline issues, massive increase in retention and morale. And so I always use the example, like, all right, you know, because a lot of people think the students, we've got to change their behavior. But the fact is, like, if we're going to bring out the best in the students, we've got to bring out the best in teachers. It requires behavior change on their parts. If we're going to bring out the best in the teachers, we've got to bring out the best in the school leaders. And it just illustrates it so well. And I've just seen it happen time and time again. But, you know, being a school leader is very difficult. Being a classroom leader is very difficult. And I've said it often, man, on this podcast, like, I think educators are the backbone of our country. And, you know, we should be bowing them the same way, you know, I've been bowed to as a sensei in martial arts classes. We should revere them more than doctors, lawyers, surgeons, whatever, you know what I mean? They are, but we're not. We are dumping them in there, and they're unprepared to meet the demands too often. And it creates a challenge, man. A lot of the challenges that, you know, we're both seeing out there. So what are some of the challenges that you are seeing and some of the work that you've done?
Well, one of the challenges I have seen that teachers don't really have all the tools they may need to help our students be successful as they may want to. Oftentimes, I would observe a classroom and a teacher would come to me and say, hey, Clarence, this is what's going on. And I kind of sit back and observe, and the teacher is doing a wonderful job navigating, you know, chunking the assignments, having different visual schedules in the room, and, you know, just doing a wonderful job, making sure everyone is being looked at and they're attending to them. However, you may have one or few kids with some behavioral issues for various reasons, of course, but nonetheless, then they feel like, well, I'm doing all I can. What do I do? And I say, no, it's okay. You did a wonderful job. I love the way you did this. However, maybe try this and try that. But then they may not feel like they're supported by other staff members at the school, or no one hears their cry for help. So that's the struggle. Teachers needing to feel more supported.
Yeah, that is such a really good point, man. And fortunately, that beyond them not getting a lot of behavioral classroom management at the university level, we have a bunch of out of field teachers coming in, and so they step into the classroom, and you know that onboarding, that 1 or 2 day training that they get at the at any district, right, level, that's not going to cut it, man. This is not the way that people learn. You know, it's like me dropping my fighters into the cage of the ring, and they're taking a beating, you know, and they're going to fall back onto old habits or the things that keep them safe. And of course, if you don't understand behavior, you're thinking, I've and they have they we they're thinking, I've got all these kids, and these kids need to do this, that, and the other. And they're right, they are not following whatever expectations have been set up. But what you and I have come to learn through our training is that we can't change somebody's history, we can't change their genetics. All we can do is arrange the environment in a way that optimizes their behavior and performance. And the leverager of that environment is the classroom leader, just like the leverager of the environment for the school is the school leader, just like the district leader. And there's these interlocking behaviors that go down. So in short, teachers don't know what they don't know, because I think you would agree with this. If they knew better, they would do better. Nobody wants to deal with these behavior challenges, you know? And so when we talk about support, what do you mean by support? Like, what would support actually look like for a teacher?
Well, in my opinion, what support will look like is that administration actually coming in and hanging out for a while and giving feedback, corrective feedback, you know, good, bad, the ugly, just letting them know how can they help. When that teacher does have that cry for help, and if the school team don't have the tools or the resources, then reach out to the district level and say, hey, at my school, you know, be honest, hey, on my campus, we need a little help with classroom management. We need a little help with staff morale. We need some funds or some resources so we can get more sensory items, or we can get more items for our PBS store, or things of that nature. But just be honest and open about it, because we all can use help. We all need support, and we can all always do better. So definitely just administration coming in, or a buddy, you know, your next door teacher. You know, you might have a rough day, a kid's really giving you a hard time. Let's have a buddy system where maybe my student can come over there for a little bit, or let's give this student a task or a job, you know, to calm them down. You know, hey, Marcus, or hey, Kenny, or Susie, Samantha, whatever, why don't you run this over across to Mr. Smith for me? Because we realize that kid needs a break. That kid is at a heightened state. So let's kind of help them, you know, just find this little techniques. But like you said, the teachers don't know what they don't know. So our job is to help them and give them some different tools and strategies.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I find that too often, when at least in the schools that are struggling, that when administrators do go into the rooms, it becomes because they don't also don't know what should be going on, right? So I don't know that they're giving the support that is needed. They might be proficient in instructional strategies, but when it comes to behavior and arranging the environment, you know, a lot of people thought, when I was going into schools, they're like, well, that's the behavior guy, right? That's the guy that changed behavior. I'm like, I don't have any magic behavior dust, right? I'm
No.
like, what I am doing is changing the behavior of the adults, right? And this is really what leadership should be doing, right? So I said, I'm engaging in leadership, you know, I'm getting these adults to creating a want for them, involving them, creating a want for them to change, helping them see that this is changing their behavior is going to move them towards some vision of the what they want, making sure they have the knowledge and skills to be successful, engaging in simple coaching to help them see the impact of their behavior on the environment. And but then that stuff needs to be maintained, right? And as a behavior analyst, when you go into schools, I'm assuming if things were the way they were when I was there, you might be assigned to like 5 or 10 schools or something like that. Is that the way it
Yes.
was worked for you? Yeah. And so you might show up on a Monday, and you're not going to be back to that school for 2 more Mondays, for example. And so, if giving the teacher, even, you know, as supportive as you want to be in helping, giving them the information, it's not going to stick if there's not some sort of local performance management at the school level support. And so, I think this is why, as behavior analysts, we have to be involved in building capacity at the schools, Going in there to create a behavior plan. Would you agree with this? Or maybe not, maybe you disagree with it, but so
Oh
my
no, I
experience that,
agree.
yeah, so many, we write these behavior plans and it's asking a teacher to do a whole bunch of things more or less or differently than they're not doing right now. And it's a lot of effort on their part. And if they're not doing basic tier one stuff, why do that? Let's help them do the easiest thing. Have you seen that a lot?
Yes, no, you're spot on. I mean, you're spot on. And I want to add to that, one of the it hasn't always been bad. I've seen a lot of good. And with that being said, one of the approaches that at least the school systems I have worked in have geared towards is really getting buy-in, teacher buy-in. Because oftentimes we write these beautiful behavior plans, have all these interventions, and then it's just thrown to the side somewhere. They peek at it for a second, or the behavior plan is just written as a check. Oh, yep, yeah, we did a plan, and now this kid's still having behaviors. Let's get him out of the school or send him to this alternative program. But when you bring in the staff, when we have this wraparound of services, when we have that team culture and everyone has a say in the meeting and everyone really digs deep and say, hey, what's going on? What's the problem? How can we fix it? Now the staff has buy-in. They feel like, oh, I created this plan. So since they created the plan, they're more than likely to implement the plan. And that's when we can see behavior change. So that's the beautiful thing once that happens.
That
I love it.
is so well said, man. This is leadership 101, but it's not, you don't, we're not seeing it often enough, I feel like, right? So, just like we want teachers to be classroom leaders, right? We want them involved. We want them to involve their stakeholders in creating the classroom management plan, right? Because if, to your point, if they author it, they will own it. And then at the school level, we want the school leaders involving the teachers in creating school improvement plan and the school-wide behavior management plan, because if they author it, they will own it. But if they don't author it, then it becomes like coercion. We're telling them to do a whole
Yes.
bunch of things more or less or differently. And like, well, they don't get the why. They don't see how it's meaningful
Exactly.
for them. What's a, give me, do you have like a concrete example? And again, never name, please don't name any schools or name any, any people, but give me a poor example of something you've seen. Then give me a good example, because there are good examples. I would love to, I think we need to highlight more exemplars, right? And I wish we could shine a light on that principal that's doing something or that team, more and unpack their behavior so people can learn from what's going well, because too often people are complaining about all the problems. That's not helping people learn, right? Let's learn what's going well so we have a model.
Okay. Well, a couple of different things I want to throw out. Let's say in the classroom, being in one of our autism units, our ASD classroom units, and we have various tools that we use, like a kid may have a communication board or a visual schedule. And then you walk into the classroom and things are okay. And then you say to the teacher, hey, where's such and such a communication board? Oh, and they scramble and they go find it up under some folders. And it's like, what are we doing? That should be right here on this student's desk, readily available so that child can communicate with you, let you know their wants or their needs. So it's little things like that at times. It's like, oh, really? Like, we talked about this. We changed the environment. As we moved the classroom around. We changed the desk, the visuals, all these beautiful things, had teacher buy-in. But like you said, we're there on a Monday. Don't come back for two more Mondays, and all of that just went by the wayside.
Yeah, we got to get them
But
behave well enough and long enough that it produces a valued outcome for them, right? Because they might have
Exactly.
the why, and that's just an antecedent strategy. But if they don't do something and see like, hey, the kids are behaving better, their job's easier, right? They're hitting some goals, they're just going to go back into the old habits.
Let's take a quick break.
If you work across schools or treatment facilities and you want an environment characterized by students or clients behaving well and meeting their goals, you need Everyday Behavior Tools. These tools are so powerful and generalizable that you can train anybody, anywhere in them. And here is the best part. The entire instructor training is online. If you are interested in becoming an Everyday Behavior Tools trainer to improve behavior in your organization while also generating more income for yourself, go to crisisintervention.com.
And then too, with some of the staff and administrators being familiar with ABA or more so maybe special education, I get a lot of buy-in from them. They really get it. They might not always like the outcome because, their administration, they hear it from the district level. So, they're kind of looking at it from different viewpoints,
Yeah.
but they still understand. And those ones, they really do try. They understand, they'll try to work with us as the analysts in the school systems. They go back to the teachers and say, hey, we really need to implement the strategy and just really get on their staff. And I love when administrators are all in and try to help us. It makes our job easier as well.
Yeah, and I think it's part of our job to get them to buy in, right? They need to see, one of the mistakes that behavior analysts have made, and I made the mistake. Everything I'm saying that I've screwed it all up, man. And I learned along the way because they don't teach you how to consult. Just because you have a behavior analytic degree doesn't mean you know how to consult. I have a whole course now. It's called the Behavioral Toolbox that's, we're unpacking now. So we're, again, all built on the mistakes that I've made. But like, one of the mistakes is just showing up to school and going to that classroom, right? Sitting in the back, collecting data, like you're going into a teacher's home. You don't go do that, right? We want to be kind of invited in, and it's set up like, the administrator, there's a behavior problem, you need to get in there. Well, hold on. Administration needs to know how the process works, right? Because it's kind of like we're going to come in here and like write a prescription, so to speak. That prescription needs to be followed, right? And so, we need to know what the administrator values, what the reinforcers are, right? We got to ask good questions of them. They need to understand how we can support the things we can do and we can't do. Like, I strayed away towards the end of working in the districts, I strayed away from writing individual behavior plans. I built capacity with the team, said, if we're going to do, we are going to do this, they're involved, right? I would ask the questions, but we'd sit at the table and they would literally do that. No more of me just going in there writing a plan because nobody followed the plan. But to your point, when they wrote it themselves, they got it. They were involved in it, right? They could picture it. It was a contextual fit, right? And it became huge. But that administrator, if they think that you are going to go in there and fix that student's behavior, it sets up a problem because when the behavior is not occurring, it's like, Dr. Cooper, you're not doing your job. This student's still misbehaving, and then you get the call and all that stuff kind of happens. Again, it's good people that don't understand because we have not done a good enough job helping them to understand that's the environment that changes the behavior and arranging the environment. So that means changing the teacher's behavior, right? Getting them to do something more or less or differently, which means the leadership or whoever's supporting that leadership or supporting the teacher, instructional coaches, counselors, guidance, whoever, special ed, going in there and giving a little feedback, right, on these little feedback loops, just again to keep the teachers behaving well enough and long enough that they start to see it's producing some sort of naturally occurring consequence. But I think we need to be better with informing administration.
Yes, I believe it. Just to throw something else out there, as you were talking, it just had me thinking again. It's just about the classroom management piece, just an example, and it kind of baffled me. Just think about a kindergarten classroom. What should kindergartners be doing at the end of the day, right? They're going to be running around, they're going to be smiling, happy, some even going to be crying. But I've been to a couple classrooms this year, believe it or not, and teachers want the kindergartens to be quiet and just to sit and sit all day. It's like, no. And then they complain about, oh, I'm having all these behaviors, and you want a kindergartner to literally sit 40 minutes at a time so you can lecture them. Like, no. So it's just going back to educating our staff and, giving them the tools they need. And it's the same thing, like when we're shaping behaviors, it's not a magic pill. It's not going to happen overnight. We have to be consistent, implement the strategies, keep teaching, give feedback, and keep teaching some more. We just have to keep going. But oftentimes in our education system, they feel like, oh, because I told you one time, you're supposed to know, and that's supposed to be it. And that's just not how it works.
I wish it was so. I wish, I know you wish it too, that if telling worked, we wouldn't be here. If blaming worked, we wouldn't be here. We'd be out of jobs, right? Everybody's told, there's always, and if giving a plan worked, if setting goals worked, if any of this stuff worked in and of itself, but we know this is signs of consequences, getting people in touch with consequences that maintains their behavior, particularly positive consequences, positive reinforcement, something of added value. That is so good. As you say it, man, I just see this stuff. So I've seen cafeterias, right? In a very, we'll talk offline about this, but in one of the high poverty schools, I was always in these schools. I love these kids. I mean, gosh, it was a bunch of good people, but they were treating the kids like it was a detention center in the whole school. I mean, they had cops coming out twice a week, and the kids were asked to come in and sit in the morning, sit in the hallway across from each other at a voice level of zero. So you expect these kids, elementary kids, to come in and follow this expectation of not talking, right? While you wait for everybody to arrive. It's impossible for that to happen. So now, as you can imagine, this expectation's been set, but the kids can't follow it. So what's that put now the teachers in a position to do is that they're walking up down the hallway and they're correcting kids all morning, right? And so the teachers are now losing instructional control because as soon as they get by, the kids start whispering again, right? And also stimulus control because the kids start to learn, like, we don't really have to follow teachers' directions, right? We just got to, when they're just like when you're You know, when you're driving out on the highway, the one time you do slow down is when you see the cop, right? Otherwise, you're pushing the speed limit because our behavior is under contingency of negative reinforcement, and it creates such a aversive environment. You know, I try to help educators see, you know, like imagine if you were in that kind of environment. You know, would you want to, you know, be around that school leader? You know, help school leaders understand that. Would you want to be around a district leader if all they were doing was correcting your behavior?
Yeah, no, not at all.
Yeah, man,
Not at
it's
all. And what I tell my staff or educators, build relationships. That's the biggest thing. I mean, that takes you and helps you go so much further with a student. And excuse me for jumping around, but let me speak on that real quick. That's a part of how I got into education, actually. So I worked in some of those schools that you were describing. And as a young Black man, to be honest with you, I could relate to some of those kids. They're more willing to listen to me because of how I look. And I understand the things that, or I have the potential to understand some of the things they may be going on or going through, rather, excuse me. Or I like some of the same food or music, you know, culture from a cultural standpoint. So again, I'm aware it's more easier for me to relate. So as you're building that rapport with a kid, even if you don't look like them or sound like them, just have a genuine conversation. Hey, how was your weekend? What do you like to do? What's your favorite food? So you can relate to them. And then let's say they have an event, an episode where they're having those maladaptive behaviors. You've built a rapport with them. You put the work in the beginning that now when they're having these behaviors, it's more easier for you to de-escalate that student
Yes.
opposed to this one teacher that's always stern, always getting on them. They don't want to hear nothing you have to say. They're going to elope or they're going to say something they don't have any business saying. And now what? Now they're suspended. Now they're missing instructional time, and that's a whole nother can of worms. So build that rapport, man.
It man,
Take
you that
the
was so well said.
time.
It's so well said. It makes your job so much easier. I'm glad you mentioned like the culture thing. Like even if you don't, you know, you are not from the culture, right? If you just focus on like treat people with respect, ask them questions, be interested in them. When I first came into some of these schools, they're like, what do you know? You're a white guy. Now, my history is a little different, right? I came up, I grew up in a Black community, man, you know, high poverty, knife held to my throat, gun put to my head, man. You know, some pretty rough stuff, man. You know, I was a minority in those places. We had to learn how to fight, you know. But it's rough growing up in there. But I think the kids kind of respected me because of my fighting background. That gave me an edge, especially with the street kids. But the great thing about the science is it does not know culture, it does not know religion, does not know gender, right? If you arrange the environments, what's reinforcing to one people? So finding out what's important to them, speaking to them authentically, you know, and you know these kids, man, the street kids, they smell it right away on you, man. If you're not real, they smell you out and they'll find your buttons, you know what I mean? And as soon as you show them a button, they'll push it, man, because they're brilliant. You know, I love these kids, man. But man, when they respect you, they start correcting each other. In this school I'm talking about, by the way, when they actually pulled me out of an alternative school and dropped me into this school mid-year, right? They'd never done this before. So it was December. I got the you know, the deputy superintendent, who's very nice, came in to me and said, she came, we really need your help. You know, they're struggling out here, and they'd removed the previous administration. They dropped me in and a principal in the school. And in 2 months, man, the local union president and the state union president came out and declared it a miracle. Now, that's not a pat on my back, that's a pat on the back of the science. And when you arrange the environment away, when you bring out the best in the adults so they can bring out the best in the students, you can get change in those ways. And when I go into schools, man, the same way you look at in the classroom, I look at how the teachers are behaving around the school leaders, because that lets me know what they really value, right? And what's been corrected, what's been reinforced and been corrected. Like, so if I see teachers yelling at the students all over the place, right? And the school leaders present, it lets me know that, you know, hey, this has been a part of the culture that's been allowed.
Yes.
And it's probably because the school leader just doesn't know better because they don't get good training. I've created the Feely prep course and another prep course, the SLLA, and so I've had to unpack all the standards. I'm like, they're missing the DNA of leadership, which is the science of human behavior. I wish they would, but that's been my mission is to equip people with that science, especially school leaders, because one good school leader can impact the whole school. If we
Yes.
want those relationships, it trickles down, man. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And back up. It's so positive. So what's a great experience that you've had in the school where you've seen like, you know what, we need more of this, this might be actually a good time if you want to highlight or give a shout out to a school leader and actually drop a name in a school. I think it's fine, like something cool.
Okay. Well, I can say this for a fact. There's a school leader in I'm gonna say Indian River County. His name is Chris Colstead. Awesome guy. Awesome guy. And he actually works at an alternative school. It's a separate day ESE school, special education school. So unfortunately, there's times where his whole campus is behaviors, if you get what I'm saying.
Oh,
It's
yeah.
just it is what it is.
Spent 7 years in those
But
schools, yes.
I mean, this guy is always so cool, and he's just so real. And he's able to talk to the kids. And the thing I like about that school in itself is that they're a family there. Like when you come in from day one, they let you know, hey, we're all a family here. We work together as a team. And to be honest, you kind of have to with the body of kids they have. You have to have each other's back. You have to have buddies and have a rapport with the kids and just really have that family culture. And I mean, he's just a wonderful guy. Like when I went there, they kind of gave me a hard time originally because I was like the new guy. But then they quickly learned, like, no, I'm a part of the team. I'm here to help. It was more so, oh, we have an analyst here, just a district guy. Oh, what do they know? They're just coming in to.
Oh,
And
yeah.
it wasn't like that. It wasn't like that at all. I just wanted to be a part of the team and do what I could. And then they eventually welcomed me. And it was beautiful. But shout out to Chris Colstead, out there in Indian River County. Awesome guy.
That's very cool, man. And now, in these kind of schools, when we talk about building relationships, and like I would hear people say, "Well, you don't know. I know what these kids need. You don't know, right?" And so they would end up modeling coercive behavior. And again, that seemed to trickle down. I remember being, and I write this in one of my books, I think Quick Wins. I was giving a talk in a library one time, and it was, the teachers were all engaged, and it was fun. They were laughing. We were, just having a good time while they were learning. All of a sudden, it got real quiet, man. I'm like, what did I say something bad? Like, how this happened? And I'm looking around and I look back, and I looked to the side of me, and I could see that the school principal had walked in to the door. And so that was not a good sign, man. You know what I mean? If there's their presence must have been a very an aversive stimulus, because people just looked like got all quiet. I'm like, oh my gosh, man, that's not good. But anyway, so there's this, I think there's this thought that, well, if you focus on relationship and positive things, like you shouldn't correct behavior. Of course, you still need to correct behavior. Behavior is occurring. To your point, when you correct it, when you have a relationship, and how you correct it becomes like, hey, Clarence, you know what the rules are, man. I hate to do it, but I got to do it, man, because I want you to learn. And it's that if the kids know you're there to take care of them, it becomes, they'll respond. But it's the same thing with the school leader to the teachers, right? You have that relationship, they'll respect you. They're going to be more likely to make that change. Has that been your experience?
Yes. And then too, something to throw in there, that reactivity you was explaining, when the administrator walks in, it's the same thing in the classroom when these administrators are doing classroom observations. And they come in, and then the kid that they unfortunately is having, a little episode, giving the teacher a hard time, and then the teacher is flustered because they're like, oh, I don't want to be checked off wrong or get a bad score on this check and whatnot. And then sometimes it happens, they do get a mark off on this observation or whatnot, and the teacher's just like, I can't win. I do everything right. Or I hear the, oh man, I wish they would have came into my third period instead. Or they would have came in earlier in the day. It was so perfect. I got through my lesson plan. I went through everything. But they came through in my sixth period where it's behaviors and it just I never got to it. And I look bad, like I don't know what I'm doing. So there's definitely that reactivity or that aversive stimuli when our administrators walk in because at times you don't know if they're there to support us or they're there to, aha, gotcha. You're not doing it right. So that goes back to the school culture as well, is the administrators being receptive to their staff's cry and their cry for help. And are they trying to give them the different tools they need and really support the staff? One of the things that I did see a tool that one of the school districts I worked in used, something so simple, believe it or not. It's like a little postcard. on one side of the postcard had like the district's logo, like the ESC, the Special Education Department's logo. And on the other side, you literally just write a nice little, hey, great job today at that manifestation meeting or IEP meeting, or hey, great job in your classroom. I love the way you, blah, 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 Dr. Cooper. And you put in an inner office mail, then that staff member at that school receives it and they light up. Oh my gosh, somebody acknowledged my hard work and efforts. But it's the little things, that positive reinforcement. So how we want to shape our students, we have to shape the teachers, shapes the
That's right.
staff. It's the same way. We have to build everybody up and condition their behaviors.
It's all the same thing. It is all the same thing. And I like that. I actually use a four boxes, right? So in the top left-hand corner of the box, because I think if you're going to walk in the classroom, the teachers, they're like shell-shocked. You know what I mean? They're deprived of reinforcement. And if you really understand shaping, you set small goals, you only focus on a couple behaviors, and they're going to be successful because you shape incremental changes, the approximations towards the desired goal. And that puts you in position to positively reinforce. If you're setting the goals too big, people fall short. Or if you set too many goals, right? Too many behaviors, if everything is important, nothing's important. So I do not like the evaluation systems. I think they've single-handedly sunk many schools for that reason, man. It should just be a coaching cycle, right? And very brief, like a tier one approach. I write about it in deliberate coaching, how I think in quick wins, how it should be done. Very simple. Administrators should be doing more frequent walkthroughs, like in, but shorter durations, right? So they have the opportunity to see that teacher under Malcolm, like 1 or 2 minutes or 3 minutes, right? You're looking for this thing. But anyways, they leave feedback in four boxes. One is, here was this cool outcome I saw, right? This result. Here was the behaviors that you were engaging in, right? So it's helping them connect their behavior results. There's a very organizational behavior management approach to it. The bottom left-hand corner, let's say a kid was, not engaged or something like that, or disrupting. I noticed little Clarence over in the corner doing this thing. I wonder what would happen if you. So it's asking the question, right? It's getting them to reflect on their own behavior as opposed to telling them what to do. These evaluation systems are so convoluted. They take so much time. They suck the life out of, look, the administrators don't like them. They hate them, right? The teachers don't like them. They hate them. Let's just replace it with a very practical approach to coaching because, brother, complexity, and I know you know this, is the enemy of execution, sustainability, and scalability, right? And in this case, it's the enemy of morale, it's the enemy of retention, it's the enemy of performance improvement because it becomes a dog and pony show. And we don't want that, right? We want the teachers to
No.
behave well enough, long enough that it's producing a valid outcome, that they know by doing this stuff, kids are behaving better, they're learning better, my job is easier, all this stuff. We have to help them do it. And we have to assume that they want to do this stuff. They don't know better. If they knew better, they would do better, right? So building
Yes.
that stuff out becomes very important, man. I don't mean to get up on the pulpit
No,
there.
you're fine. You're definitely fine. I love it. And just talking about, I want to talk about education for another quick second, kind of jump back and forth. Primarily all my experience is in the education. That's where I've come from, public education. But I've recently left public education and went out into the private world. And I work for a company now, and I realized it's a whole new world. I was missing out on so much that I didn't realize. In the school system, things are kind of geared a certain way. We're on these timelines and these certain goals and objectives that have to
Which
be
is
met and
crazy because
crunched
we
out.
all learn different, right?
Exactly. You know, man, you
You
get it.
know what I'm
And
saying?
but that's what it is, unfortunately. So now that I'm out here in this world, I get to actually be a clinician, really apply behavior analytic principles, and I see it, and I'll get to work with families, and they don't know what we know. They don't, for the most part, they don't know what some of our educators know. So to hear, like, oh wow, I can tell them a basic concept, how to provide positive reinforcement or how to deny access or something like that. And they're like, oh my gosh, thank you. They believe this is the best intervention ever. And which will help, don't get me wrong. But I'm like, oh, really? That's all you need? Just a little push. So people don't know what they don't know, as you said, and our families don't know what they don't know. And we really have to really get our families more into the school. They need to get positive phone calls. They have positive meetings, not just oh, your kid did this, your kid that, your kid is so bad. No, let's have more positive interactions. Again, build relationships, build rapport, so we can all work together for the better good of the student.
Man, do I so
That's
much
what we
believe
need.
that? And I'm so thankful that again, you're a black man, and
Yeah.
there's not. I mean, listen, if you've grown up in one of these neighborhoods in the area that we live at, you probably might be mistrusting the white folks. You know what I mean? And also, if they don't have like cultural sensitivity, They don't know. You haven't showed up at the church. You know what I mean? You don't know any of the people that they know, right? So how do they trust you? And so you show up to their house and they're like, they don't want you around, you know? And but you might need services. So it's incredibly important. But it's not that you can't do it if you're a white guy or a white woman, right? But you have to engage. You have to develop a relationship. You need to find out what's important. You need to involve them and help them to understand. And they will love you. I've been so embraced by the by the black community. Of course, it helps that I have a black wife, as well. But like, man, it's great. I love going up in there. And they know because they can trust me that I'm there to help. So anybody can do it, right? But going back to science, you need to find out what's important to people. You need to understand what they value. You need to involve them. You need to understand, not go in there with your judgment hat on, you know? Now, are you consulting back in the schools now that you're out, or is it just in homes or clinics? Like, what is it that you're doing?
All of the above. The company I work for, they offers services within the school, the community, and we have a clinic as well.
You can say what company you work for. You can, that's where you can drop it in.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
ABA Centers of Florida. The
Okay.
overall umbrella is ABA Centers of America. And actually, over the summertime, Miss Quatiba Davis actually recruited me. Awesome woman. Black lady. She's now the chief clinical operator of the company, and she's awesome as well. She really inspires me. Like you and her, that's some big shoes to fill. I want to aspire to be as great as you guys. I mean, the body of work, the things that you both have done is just beautiful
You'll
enough.
be you'll thank you, brother, but you'll be greater, man. You'll be greater, man.
Ah.
Yeah, man, listen, you listen, you I mean, it's I'm really happy to see a black man, a BCBAD, especially in this area, so we definitely gotta link up, do something at some point, man. I'm not sure what it is, but we'll
Yes, I'm
figure
all
out something
for
like that, yeah, because there's people needing a lot of help in there, man. We can shed. We can share a message of goodness, man, about how the science can help people, how we can, help in schools or whatever. So I think we can do some stuff together. So listen, man, if somebody wanted to reach out to you, to find out more, to ask you a question, to, I don't know, maybe they want to involve you, have them come give a talk somewhere or
it.
something like that. What's the best place for that to happen?
The best place for it to happen, honestly, would probably be my LinkedIn account. It's Clarence Cooper on it's EDD, comma BCBAD, but Clarence Cooper, find me on LinkedIn. Or you can shoot me an email. It's CooperClarence@yahoo.com. That's CooperClarence at yahoo.com. Please reach out. I would love to network with people. Just try to build myself and help build others. So reach out.
That's awesome, man. And I'll make sure I put the link to your LinkedIn here, and just email me your email so I can put it in the show notes as well, man. Well,
Yes,
let's stay
yes.
with me for a second, man. We'll talk offline a little bit. I have some other questions for you. But Dr. Cooper, thank you so much for coming on and taking the time to share your morning. And folks, this is Sunday morning. You know what I mean? We're up doing the things that we love to do, man. We could be doing some other things, but we love to do this stuff. So thanks so much, man.
Yes. Yes, sir. Dr. Devoni, thank you. Appreciate it.
Traditionally, many crisis management systems have taken a what's wrong with you approach that begins as a person escalates when addressing behavioral issues. PCM, as a trauma-informed approach rooted in applied behavior analysis, shifts this perspective from what's wrong with you to what happened to you by having a complete picture of a person's situation in life, past and present. This approach is fundamental to applied behavior analysis and therefore PCM, as it seeks to determine the root causes of behavior based on both the current environment and the individual's history as a means of individualizing education, treatment, and support. For more about PCM, check out crisisintervention.com.